Okay. Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We are laughing today and getting things going in a great way. We are so glad you're joining us. Today's topic is with Dr. David Orm Johnson and our wonderful guest, Stephen Harper, who's here to sit on in and keep us company and give us some few thoughts. So David Orm Johnson is going to be talking about a number of issues regarding psychological health, mental health, and different techniques that are useful. Well, I'll let him introduce what he's going to be talking about. You are listening to Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. Too many doctors here. Anyways, if you'd like to connect with us, please email me, scott@ardentcenter.com. Ardent is A-R-D-E-N-T, scott@ardentcenter.com. And I could hook you on up. If you hear something you'd like more interest of, I could send you where to get resources like archives for some of David's lectures that he's been doing. We also archive these shows. You could go to YouTube and type in Ardent Counseling Center, and you could see them there. Anyways, so we're the esteemed, famous, internationally famous Dr. Orm Johnson. Tell us about yourself. Tell us about your jokes. And
okay, so I got a BA in psychology from Columbia University and a PhD in experimental psychology, a rat runner. So I want to talk overall about collective consciousness and mental health and things like distant healing, and do we influence each other at a distance? You know, we have this experience that someone's staring at us and we feel that effect, or we pray for somebody, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And so I'd like to talk about that, because we have this theory that what happens in society, you know, the crime rates and the sickness rates and the mental health problems are influenced by what we call collective consciousness, that the individual, it's like we all live in a fishbowl of the interactions between different people. And so each of us is contributing to collective consciousness, and collective consciousness is reflecting back onto us. So if we're very stressed, we're creating a stressed influence in collective consciousness, which is stressing everybody else.
And so it's the herd mentality, like when we talk about the vaccines and other things. If you're not vaccinated, and don't mean to get into that controversy, and we're trying not to here, but, you know, then other people are an influence to get infected. Weak and elderly, children, for example.
That's right.
And so as an analogy, if we're living in New York City or Calcutta or someplace with a lot of stress, let's say,
right,
and I'm not taking care of myself, I could be more easily influenced by those around me.
That's
and the
right.
stress of that. Is that an analogy follow through or not really?
Yes, and there's actually data showing that people do influence each other at a distance. You know, there's a sensory communication. You see people, you talk to them, those influences. But also when you think about people and your attitudes towards them and your thoughts towards them is having an influence. And there's about 2,000 studies that have been done on this kind of phenomenon. And I recently read a meta-analysis of the really good studies. A meta-analysis is a way to come to a very systematic quantitative conclusion about a large group of studies. And what they found is, the overall conclusion is yes, it's true that people, you know, with good studies, when you stare at someone, you can have an effect on their physiology. When I was a little kid, about 8 years old, my mother's sister lived with us, Aunt Ski, and she was going to college, and she was really beautiful, and she drove a red convertible, and she came home one day really excited, and she was at the A&W root beer stand where everybody parks out and gets their, you know, in their cars, and she and her friends, she started feeling, you know, someone's looking at me or something. She had this feeling, and she's looking around, and finally she sees on the other side of the parking lot, there's a guy there staring at them with binoculars. She ended up meeting the guy and was friendly with him and dating him. But she came home. I remember as a little kid, she came home that day so excited, and she told this story. You know, how could that happen, that people are interacting with each other at a distance? And a lot of people have that kind of experience.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be cosmic, so to speak.
No, uh-uh.
I mean, I describe it like if you walk into a room where a couple... I do a lot of couples therapy, right?
Right.
So a couple has been having this terrible fight.
You feel it.
And so even if your children don't hear the fight, so to speak,
right,
they know, they could feel it.
That's right.
There is no hiding from children, by the way.
No.
Everybody who thinks, oh, well, I didn't smoke in the room. I didn't have the fight there. I wasn't yelling. Kids know.
Yeah, they know. And all the people you're connected with know. Another talk that we heard yesterday at this October surprise, which I guess we should explain what that is.
Yes,
we're having a series of conferences here at Marshy University of Management, and one of them was this great physicist, Dr. John Hagelin, talking about the mechanisms which could explain these interactions between people. And one of the ideas that came out was this quantum entanglement, but what it means is that the people you have the most interactions with, you're most connected with, like your children or your relatives, you have the greatest sort of influence on them at a distance like that. You know, without they feel you. You know, you feel your mother's going to call or the phone rings. Oh yeah, that's my brother, and pick it up, and there he is. And a lot of people have that experience. So, the more genetically you're connected, and so forth. So knowing that, what we want to do is to try to create more coherence in ourselves, so that we're having a better influence on other people, and also it makes us more resilient in dealing with these influences that come towards us.
Right, so we're talking about the resilience, the herd mentality, that if we're taking care of ourselves, then we're not as susceptible
to the
influence of, let's say, more negative influences of those around us.
That's right.
Okay.
And then there's this issue, the people that did the meta-analysis on prayer, distant prayer.
I've heard of that.
It turns out that it's one of the most commonly used modalities of alternative and complementary medicine. People pray for each other, or maybe a group's praying for people.
I know there's organizations that you could simply write the daily prayer. I forgot their name. Stephen might know that.
Unity Church is
one
that does.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think a lot of churches do it, actually.
And that you could actually send them a message, and they will pray for you or pray for somebody you know. I'm Jewish, and I know that we say a prayer of healing and forgiveness, or healing for those that are healed and
right.
or are broken. And when I had a really bad accident 10 years ago, one of the things I felt, and I intimately felt for some strange reason, this notion of community was behind me, and I wasn't alone. And I think that's part of it, is getting that notion, none of us are alone. We don't come in this world alone. We don't leave alone. We're here to be connected. As much as we want to isolate out of fear.
And we can help each other.
And we don't have to get lost in our fear or be codependent on everybody else on the flip side, but we are connected in a healthy way.
Yes,
we can be.
And we can be connected, unfortunately, in an unhealthy way. You know, if it's true that we're influencing each other, you know, in these laboratory situations, let me explain, for example, a typical experiment. There'll be a guy in a booth, and he has some meter where he can watch the heart rate and the skin conductance and other measures of stress in some other person who doesn't know about it. And he has a list of random numbers, and on the even numbers, he's trying to make the heart rate go up, and the odd numbers, he's trying to make the heart rate go down. And it works. He's just this intention. So, you know, it's a small effect, but it's statistically significant. So if you can have these kinds of influences between people in a very, you know, kind of abstract, unmotivated, really laboratory situation, what happens when you're driving down, you know, the road and someone cuts you off and really angry, you know?
Yes, I'm a Chicago guy, and I can tell you about that.
It's actually creating this influence in collective consciousness.
You know,
or people really loving each other and thinking about each other. It's creating these powerful influences in collective consciousness, and that the sum total of that is what we call collective consciousness.
So this is not just some far-flung cosmic thought. I mean, one of the things I've looked at is this notion of mirror neurons, which I'm sure you know about. And this notion that if I am watching somebody, it affects me. That
right.
In a sense, we are animals, and we have to recognize that part of our being is very primal.
Right.
And watching somebody do something affects us.
Right.
Almost like if we rehearse something in our mind and we close our eyes and we rehearse a dance routine or an
right.
exercise routine, or I did Kung Fu for a number of years. You know, it's almost, I forgot the percentage, but it's pretty high percentage as effective actually doing the thing itself.
Right. Okay. So you actually, because the mind is really the governor of the body. You see the handwriting, you know, oh, look at that hand. It's so intelligent. Well, no, it's the hand is just the servant. The intelligence behind the handwriting is the mind, the inner mind. And the you see all the activity in society, but the underlying intelligence, which is guiding what's happening in society, is the collective consciousness. And the government is the main focus of collective consciousness. So they are reflecting coherence in collective consciousness more than any individual. So if you happen to, in some situation, it might happen that there were presidential candidates who were very adversarial, who were criticizing each other, who was this huge conflict. The problem is that there's not enough coherence in collective consciousness. So what we're trying to do at Marsh University of Management, and other people are trying to do this around the world, is to create a group meditating, practicing transcendental meditation to create coherence in collective consciousness, because there's been 51 studies that show that if you have the square root of 1% of a population practicing transcendental meditation, it decreases crime rate, it improves the health statistics, and so forth. You might ask, why? You know, why TM? What's happening there? What's happening is that the deeper levels of every individual's mind is a level of coherence, you know, bliss, all goodness, you can say. In religious terms, you could say it's like the will of God, or in modern...
Inner peace.
Yeah, inner peace. In terms of modern physics, it's a unified field of natural law. And where is it? Where do you find it? It's always with you, because it's your own self. It's the deepest part of your own mind, your own self. Wherever you are in time and space, any time in your life, that it's with you, because it's the inner observer looking out into the world. So it's always there. The trick is, how do you get back to it? You can't get there by thinking. You can talk about it, you know, say, oh, there's this, like I'm doing right now, there's this, you know, inner peace. It sounds like a really good thing. How do I get to it? It's very tricky to turn the mind back within, and that's what transcendental meditation does. It
allows. So why not mindfulness or some other meditation? Because, you know, I have a number of clients who use other meditative techniques, and
right.
they find them very effective.
Okay.
What's the difference from what you've found, and then I could say what I found from my...
Okay. So the difference is, with mindfulness, you're doing something with a certain amount of effort involved. They're asking you to observe your thoughts, for example. You know, so there's something to do like that. With TM, it's automatically the mind is transcending, going back to subtler, quieter levels. And the research...
That deeper level, so from a level of physics, that unified field, that you can create this larger collective consciousness, could
right.
be greater influenced
That's
by
right.
your mind.
That's right, because you're accessing the most fundamental level of your mind. And that is a level...
Which is deeper than the thinking level.
Oh, much deeper than the thinking level. Thinking is like, it's like if you consider the mind analogy like an ocean, there's waves on the surface, and that's like thought. And mindfulness works on that level of waves. It may be quiet waves, but it's wavy. TM is allowing the waves to settle down, and then you're just experiencing the unbounded ocean, you know, flat and unbounded.
I think that doesn't dismiss the usefulness of mindfulness. It's just about a different application.
That's right. For example, in therapy, there are active things to do. you know, like cognitive therapy, like thinking, think how you're thinking a certain way about your experience. Well, maybe you don't need to think.
Reframing that.
Yeah, you don't need to think. You reframe that. Do you really have to think that way? You know, do you have to think negative? Maybe, you know, you can look at it another angle and, oh, yes, and I feel better. What TM does is it goes down to settling down the mind and the physiology settles down. And in that quiet state, the body heals itself. We know that if we get sick, no matter what else the doctor says, he tells you to get rest. Why? Because the body has all of these homeostatic feedback loops, which are always trying to create an ideal situation. You know, it's measuring your blood pressure and the arteries and so forth. There's all these mechanisms to settle down and reduce your blood pressure, but you have to go into a state of rest. Otherwise, it's in the body, the mechanisms of the body are engaging to support what you're doing in activity. So if you rest, it allows the body to heal itself. And the research on TM shows that people get healthier. I did a study of Blue Cross statistics on 2,000 meditators over 5 years. They had overall about half the sickness rates, and it was lower in every field, in every area. Heart disease was less, cancer was less, you know, infectious diseases.
And this wasn't like a small thing. This is some serious quantitative analysis that you're doing.
How can it have this broad effect, you might ask? You know, is it a placebo?
By the way, let me introduce you for one second. You are listening to KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial. Today on Mental Health Matters, we're with Dr. David Orme Johnson, and we're talking about a variety of issues related to mental health. And David Orme Johnson is doing a couple talks on this October surprise. So let me do a commercial break here, so to speak. Stephen Harper is here as well. Stephen, can you tell us a little bit about this October surprise? Because some people are aware of it and some people aren't. And if you're wanting to find out more about this, and maybe if you can't, you miss some of them, because by the time this broadcast, you'll have missed some, they'll be archived, right?
Yes, they will.
Yes, they're all being taped. There's 40 talks being given. It started October 12th, and it's going through November 14th. And David gave a talk last night that was very well attended, and he's going to give another one on Friday, October 28th. Dr. Schneider is speaking. Dr. John Hagelin, who also David referred to earlier in the show, is going to be speaking again on Saturday, October 29th. And then also we have Professor Thimalaya from India speaking about sustainability. He is apparently well-known.
He's from Nepal, actually. Nepal, he's from Bhutan. Bhutan or Nepal? Incredible guy.
I think you're right, Bhutan.
Yeah. Okay.
We have Ed Malloy, the mayor of Fairfield, giving a talk, My Love Affair with Fairfield, November 1st. And a famous person in the TM movement, Dr. Luis Alvarez from Latin America, telling us about all of the large collective group meditations that are happening in Latin America. The programs can be found in the inserts of the Fairfield Weekly Reader. I don't think I have time to go through all of them.
No. And you could simply Google October Surprise in Fairfield. And again, these should be archived so people can listen if they happen to miss it or they're out of town. But there's been some phenomenal talks, and you don't have to be a meditator. You might find them interesting if you were or aren't, or were a meditator or not a meditator. You know, people have gotten into these camps. I'm from this camp and I'm from this camp. And it's enough of the separation. Part of the problem with the politics, for instance, nowadays, is it becomes an us versus them mentality or an all or nothing thinking, something I've railed again over and over again in a bunch of these shows. And getting out of that all or nothing, us versus them, we're right and they're wrong, or whatever it is, and going, no, we're all in this together. And the collective consciousness part that you're talking about, David, is just absolutely stunning, because that's part of what we're talking about.
Right.
And I'm going to ask a skeptic's question in a moment about this, because you know, I'm going to be devil's advocate and say how much I don't believe it on certain levels, and I want you to come back at me, okay?
Okay.
But you were talking before, and I'm sorry to have interrupted you.
Well, just to continue what you're saying is that I think what we all want is harmony in society. I mean, society is built, everybody working together. None of us could survive off on our own for very long or very well. And the reason that the human species has become so successful is because our ability to communicate with each other and to work together. And so, and it says on our dollar bill, e pluribus unum, you know. So if it says it, you know, together we stand on our dollar bill, it must be true.
Okay.
This is the motto of our country, so let's live up to that motto. So what we're trying to do with these group meditations is to create harmony in society. But you need, and we're not seeing much harmony right now, although overall there's a lot of really good things happening in the world. And one of the good things you can say about all these exposures of wrongdoing, and, you know, I won't give any examples, is that when collective consciousness becomes more coherent, it becomes more transparent. It's like if you go into a room, it's been dark, and you turn on the light, and suddenly you see, oh, there's some dirt over here, and there's some cockroaches over there, and you can clean up the mess, you know. So I think that's part of what's happening right now in the collective consciousness, is that the light is being turned on, and people are aware of things that have not been right, and now we need to all work together to make them better. But that's what I think we're all trying to achieve. And what the meditators are doing with sitting with their eyes closed, they're not going to solve, they're not going out there solving the economic problems, they're not out there making new, better laws and so forth, or appointing better people in high positions. What they're doing is creating a ground of coherence where all of this activity will happen more effectively in a more positive, holistic way, more in terms of the integrating level of the infinite field of coherence at the basis of the universe, you know, the unified field of
natural law. So a lot of people have forgotten this. Like, I know there's a lot of people who are siddhas, who do this advanced meditation practice.
Right.
And they don't come to do it collectively.
Right.
And you would say, come, remember why we're doing what we're doing.
Right.
Because it really does matter. So, right, you would say that, correct?
I would. The analogy I give, it's like we're all on an elevator, you know, with this program that Marcy's given us to go to higher states of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And that elevator is the golden dome where we all meditate together, where we've shown that it's most powerful. And there are people there who are meditating long term, and they're having these classical experiences of enlightenment, infinite bliss, and, you know, they're seeing the celestial world in a celestial way. I was on it for a while, and I came out, you know, I come out, just looking at the world, the leaves, the birds, all of that, it's a fantastic harmony, and it's beautiful and incredible. You know, it's a whole different way of seeing the world. So why do some people get off the elevator? It's like a lot, it's like the elevator's
going
up. Well,
maybe they're not feeling it. Or maybe they're, I mean, I run into a lot of people who aren't feeling it anymore.
Yeah.
Or they're feeling like, you know, I did it. I did my time, you know? And
yeah.
It's like, you know, it doesn't work.
Okay.
It doesn't work for me. Or, you know, people do still kill themselves, even in our community.
Yeah.
You know, if it worked. I mean, part of the reason I set up this Mental Health Alliance with Dr. Pearson to look at what we can do for this community.
Right.
In the larger community to create mental health awareness. And we've been creating some fantastic lectures.
Yeah.
Stephen was just at one the other night that was just mind-blowing how wonderful and powerful it was and emotional. But, you know,
and that's very, very important and very, very needed. And why is it then that some people who are meditating are still having problems, you know, because all the research shows that in general,
you
get better.
Absolutely.
Like the health insurance study, it's 50% less, but still there's 50 people are getting sick. We're all going to die eventually. We're all going to get old, unfortunately. So, you know, how do you explain this? And you know, one of the things that in one of his books on questions and answers, it's called Transcendental Meditation Questions and Answers by Marshy. One of the things he addresses is karma. And he said, we have this mountain of karma. And when we reincarnate, we take a suitcase of karma into this life, which is the karma of our body. even, and if we get enlightened, even if we get fully enlightened in this life, what happens is that mountain of karma burns away. All the past, you know, we're clear, and it means we're just unbounded, that infinite self. However, we have to live out that suitcase of karma. If we have the karma, the genetic load to have cancer or something like that, it's going to happen. Now,
If we've been smoking for a bunch of years, yeah, you're more likely to get cancer.
You're still going to get
it. But that doesn't mean, okay, we're kind of screwed. But on the other hand, it's like, no, you're not, because you could still do something to make it last.
Well, yeah. Okay, so stuff happens to people when they're meditating. But the big change that it does make is gives you more resilience and more ability to deal with it. Your parents still die, but I found in my personal life, I was able to handle that, and it sounds strange, but in a way it was a very blissful experience, a very close experience with my parents when they died. It was very profound. And the ability to find solutions to problems as they come along. Your karma is certain things, you're going to have to deal with certain things. And as a community, if the community is having problems because these people have problems, these people, including me and everybody. But I think this community is more responsive to dealing with these problems. From this community have come great heroes in the area of genetic modification and in the area of dealing with CAFOs. I happened to be in Iowa City staying with some people, and they were interested in various social problems and the oil, you know, pipelines coming down from Canada. And they thought of Fairfield as this lighthouse of people who were, you know, helping on all these issues. And so
that's true with the Blue Zones. Ken Daly has been a leader in the state, faculty at MUM, in health, general physical health throughout the state. I would say to people, because I went through some very major emotional challenges shortly after moving here 20 years ago, and what I did was I started doing a lot of what we call rounding or extra meditations, and this is what really, for me, gave the incredible power, the clarity and happiness within to deal with those great challenges. And I also did various therapies, cognitive therapies, as Nancy Lansdorf was talking about in her talk the other night, that were, I thought, much more powerful for me because of how clear I was in recognizing the patterns that we discussed in my behavior and then catching myself and saying, oh, that's what that is, yeah, and I don't want to do it that
so
way anymore.
So you're meditating doesn't mean, as people think, all my problems go away. I'm meditating my problems away.
No.
It just means that my nervous system's calmed down enough where I could focus more and utilize it in a more productive manner.
That's right.
Is that how you'd say it?
The creativity and awareness to meet those problems and overcome them successfully.
More resilience. Mm. And then there's the question of why are people not having these experiences? Some people are, and they meditate and they get this unbounded awareness. It's bliss. It's infinite. And other people say, I've been meditating for years and, you know, it's not happening. I happen to know someone very well who says she has never transcended. She's never had that clear experience. And yet, she's just written a book saying how much TM has totally transformed her life. So there's two, so it's no doubt that the ability, you know, raising children and all these very concrete things have been much, much better. It's really reduced stress. We run out of time.
We're running out of time.
Oh, no.
No, thank you. This stuff goes fast. Thank you so much, David. So Dr. Orm Johnson and Stephen Harper, is there anything else you'd like to say about your talks or about anything else? This is Mental Health Matters, KRUU, with Dr. Orm Johnson. We've been talking about a whole host of things. We're going to try and get David on again. David, anything else you want to say to close out?
Just the last point, for those who are practicing the TM and TM City program in Fairfield in the community, please get back on the elevator Go to the domes for your own sake and for the collective consciousness of the country's sake. We really need you to come and, you know, join us in meditation and these group meditations.
And we could be there for you, that we don't have to be alone even in the middle of our community, that take the extra 5 minutes. Don't be lazy, and, you know, let's be together. Let's do something so that collectively we can do something. And that doesn't mean, you know, if it's with what we're doing with the Mental Health Alliance or on any other level. Anyways, thank you so much, Stephen. Thank you so much, David Orm Johnson, Dr. Orm Johnson. And thank you for joining us. And do make a difference in your life today, everyone. Bye.
Great. Thank you.